I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Mike, smile for the camera.
Okay, fine. But, you know, this is a podcast. There's no video.
I know, but we've got to have something to put out there on social media.
Okay, fine. If you insist, here we go.
Now, let's say we want to delete this photo we just took because we're not going to use it.
When you delete a photo, whatever kind of photo, you expect it to not, like, resurface years later just to surprise you.
You know, Chris, I rarely take bad photos, but on those rare occasions that I do, I don't want them to come back and haunt me. Yeah, I know. Everyone's a skeptic.
Well, we are talking about photos reappearing on iPhones this week. That's because earlier this spring, Apple released an iOS update that caused some users' photos to resurface years after they'd been deleted.
You know, it seems like some information is harder than ever to escape from.
It does. And whether those photos were just old, duplicates, bad, or sensitive, users deleted them for a reason.
I'm Mike Rogers. That is one of our producers, Chris Blake. And this is Something Offbeat. This week, I spoke with Victoria Songs, a senior reviewer at The Verge, who covers wearable and health tech. Now, the iOS update that we mentioned, it's 17.5, by the way. So there's been a few incarnations of this. It was released on May 13th, and Apple came out with a fix pretty quickly, just 7 days later.
It's very common for companies to release a software fix when there's a bug. And in this case, they did. They acknowledged that the bug was in fact real, that it did exist, and that they had issued a fix for it. The thing is that, you know, when you have something as sensitive as photos, and then you hear that they're reappearing out of nowhere, and don't worry, we fixed it, but we're not going to go into what happened or explain the provenance of all of that. You know, you get some people just a little disconcerted and unsettled by that. So that's kind of the gist of what this conflict with the iOS bug was.
I think disconcerted is probably an understatement. I mean, when I delete a photo, most of the photos that I delete, it's because they're bad pictures or duplicates or whatnot. But, you know, every now and then you delete pictures for a reason. You don't want those around. But apparently they still are.
Yeah. So it kind of gets to the heart of what does it mean when I delete a file? And, you know, the actual expectation is you delete something, it goes into your recycle bin, and that's done. But that's actually not how deleting files really works, and it hasn't for a long time. Even in the beginning, when you delete a file, and let's say you actually empty your recycle bin, that doesn't mean that data is actually gone from your computer. That data is still there until the computer overwrites it. What is no longer there is like the pathway to that particular file. So it's a little more complicated now that we have cloud servers and things being stored not locally on your phones, which, you know, your phone is a mobile computer. So, you know, the fact of the matter is that nothing you delete is ever truly deleted until your computer overwrites it.
How do we know when that happens? Are we notified at all, or do we just have to wait 10 years and assume that it's happened?
Yeah. So unless you wipe your computer, like you completely reset it, you completely wipe it, there's just no way of knowing. It's very hard to tell. And that's part of the reason why this problem happened, right? So, you know, Apple clarified, not officially. So they went and they talked to 9to5 Mac on background, but they didn't officially come out with the statement explaining things. They just on background were like, oh, you know, this was a thing where files that were locally stored on an Apple device when, you know, the files weren't permanently deleted off that device. So when they transferred to a new one, it was like some sort of form of database corruption, and that's why they popped up. It wasn't an iCloud thing. So, you know, it is a very sobering reminder that you don't know unless you completely wipe and reset your hardware. So on iOS, if you delete a photo, it'll actually just go to your recently deleted folder for 30 days. And then after that, it is quote unquote permanently deleted.
This is something I was actually going to ask you as to whether this could possibly be a good thing. If you inadvertently delete something, could you call up the company and say, hey, I know you've got it somewhere. Can you help me? They'd probably just deny it, though, that they had it.
Well, it depends. So each company is going to have different data retention policies. And you're going to have to, if you're like really diligent, you will read up on those data retention policies. But most of us, you know, we see a terms of service or we see a privacy policy and our eyes glaze over. But each company is going to do it slightly differently. If the files are end-to-end encrypted, they just might not be able to actually tell themselves either. Apple was very adamant that this particular bug was kind of a rare one and that a very small number of people were affected. But the fact is that people were affected. So a company may not actually be able to help you recover that without some sort of data recovery software. And, you know, there are people who do specialize in that. But it also depends on how much time has passed. If there is a file that you've deleted, 10 years ago, there is a good chance that that has been overwritten already. Whereas, you know, there's other issues where, like, for example, when my mom passed, we didn't actually have the passcode to her iPad. So I just now have this iPad where I don't know the passcode to, but if I go to Apple, because she didn't list me as like a legacy contact, the only way for me to regain access to that iPad is to wipe everything on it. So, you know, there's different privacy policies that companies have in place with regard to how much they're going to help you access files.
Should this make us more concerned that tech companies, not just Apple, but all tech companies, might be saving our information?
I think you have to be aware of that. Just in modern society, the reality is that we are going to continue using these tech products. It is very difficult to remove that from your life at this point. You're going to need it for your job. You're just everything is increasingly online and digital. That's just a fact. But you do have to be very aware of what their privacy policies and their data retention policies are. And it does behoove people to kind of read up on it and learn how do cloud servers work? What happens when you delete something off the cloud versus what's the benefit of keeping and storing something locally? What does it mean when you delete something?
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Mike, how diligent are you with files on your phone or computer, whether it's work or personal?
I think that would depend on your definition of the word diligent. What about you?
Not terribly. Before the cloud, I was one of those people who my personal Mac would say, you've got to delete some stuff before you can put anything else on this computer.
You know, there's two kinds of people. There's a hoarder and a deleter. And I'm a deleter. I get rid of a lot of pictures. My wife, my daughters, you get on their phones, and they've got 10, 12, 14,000 photos on there. It's unbelievable.
Well, it's so easy because when we take a photo now, we usually snap 5 or 6 to make sure we got a good one. Then there's also just those random screenshots that you text somebody and just wind up on your camera roll and you forget to delete them.
So I do that too if I take 5 or 6, but I will immediately go in and pick the best one and get rid of the other 4 or 5.
See, that's good digital hygiene.
You have to accept to a degree that your information is always going to be out there if you want to engage with these products. And it's not a satisfying answer, I can admit that, especially if you really care about your privacy. But there are steps and like things that you can do to mitigate just how leaky things are. But you really do have to weigh that against convenience because cloud storage is extremely convenient for a lot of people for different reasons. But you do have to just kind of educate yourself about the type of things that you store on the cloud. What are you comfortable with? Do you like a company's retention policy and their encryption policy versus another's, it's really important to do that research for yourself.
You know, while many people are concerned with how much data tech companies are holding on to, they may have some misconceptions about what is and isn't stored on the internet. It's easy to think that once something makes it onto the web, it's there forever, but that's not necessarily the case.
Pew Research recently released the study that was just kind of eye-opening, but something like 38% of the websites that were around in 2013 are no longer accessible on the internet. And that has a lot of implications, right? So we treat the internet as kind of an archive of sorts, but it's not actually a very permanent one. Let's say, you know, this happened with The Messenger, which was a new publication. When that publication shut down, the company just decided it wasn't going to keep the server and all the data on that. So the access to it was just disappeared from the internet.
That Messenger launched just last year and billed itself as a nonpartisan digital news outlet that it shut down in January after just 8 months. And Victoria's right. If you go to Messenger.com today, it is simply a white page with the words The Messenger on it, along with a generic email address.
And for writers, that's kind of heartbreaking because it means like, oh, you know, the work that you put out digitally, you hope that it stays up. But there are so many news articles with referenced links in them that when you click those links, they just take you to a broken page.
Let me ask you this. Could artificial intelligence make this even more complicated?
Absolutely. You're seeing that right now where... the thing about artificial intelligence is it's been around for such a long time. We're just kind of moving into a new era of it where it's generative and where it's pulling on things that you may not necessarily have thought you gave it permission to. We're seeing this with publishers right now where, you know, the New York Times and other publishers are arguing with OpenAI over, you know, the data that it used to train its language model on. So in that respect, that's very true. And then you have other, you know, computers and phones and companies just introducing these new AI features, and they're saying how personalized it'll be to you. Well, what is it basing that personalization on? It's kind of basing it on your data. And, you know, Apple just had its annual WWDC developers conference. And in it, they mentioned that iOS 18 will be able to intuitively tell when it should go to the cloud to ask for extra processing power versus what it can do on your phone. And it'll ask for your consent as to like what information is being shared and information that's only relevant. And a lot of that depends on how much do you trust Apple to actually implement that in a way that is honest and true and is available for third-party security researchers to investigate.
The rule I usually go by is once it's out there for good.
Mm-hmm. That's actually a very good rule to live by, just because, like, for example, I do a lot of fitness tech and health tech testing, which means I'm on smartwatches all the time. So let's say you have a smartwatch and it collects your data and you read the privacy policy and you're like, cool, I get it. That's how it is. I'm okay with it. And then you integrate it with, like, say, Strava or a third-party app. Well, you have now agreed to give your data to a third party that has a different privacy policy and a different policy for how your data is retained and what it's used for. So it's truly, when it's out there, it's out there. So you just kind of have to really think about whether that's comfortable for you and whether the convenience is really worth it.
I'm Mike Rogers. Thanks so much for listening to Something Offbeat. This episode written and produced by Lauren Berry and Chris Blake, with audio editing by Chris Blake and original music by Myron Kaplan. Now to keep listening, subscribe to us on the Odyssey app, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. And if you've got your own offbeat story that you think we should cover, tell us about it. You can send it to somethingoffbeat@audacy.com.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.